This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
Well, folks, we are so fortunate. We have a returning guest today, Zach Mercurio, and he wrote this famous book that I'm sure all of you are hearing about all over LinkedIn and social media called The Power of Mattering. But today we're going to talk about skills of mattering. So, Zach, if you would, let our listeners know a little bit about yourself, about the power of mattering, and kind of walk us into this area of skills of mattering.
Yeah, I do research and teach in a place called the Center for Meaning and Purpose. We study what makes life and work meaningful. And the rest of my time is I'm actually out with leaders helping to create environments where people experience meaningfulness in their work. And one of the core elements of experiencing meaningfulness and motivation and engagement and well-being in work is the experience of mattering. It is very hard for anything to matter to someone who doesn't believe first that they matter. This idea of mattering starts as a survival instinct to be important to someone, and it grows into the need to feel seen, heard, valued, and needed. And so mattering is when that need is met, when we do feel seen, when we do feel heard, by the people around us. And it comes from feeling valued and knowing how we add value. And the temptation with my work is to say, why do you have work? Why do you have a job? I mean, why can't you just say, hey, this is common sense. Be a good human at work. Shortest podcast episode in history, right?
Nothing more, right?
That's it. But the big problem is, if I were to summarize it, is that common sense is not common practice, especially when it comes to caring for people. And there's a few reasons why it's not common practice, which necessitates the skills we're going to talk about today. One is that our skills to show the people around us that they're valued and that they add value to our lives have decayed over the last 25 years. So if Skip gives me some bad news, I can just send Skip a sad-faced emoji now on a platform, Slack, whatever, Teams, and just say, hey, sorry to hear that. I don't have to sit with Skip and actually seek understanding and show compassion. And what we have to understand is that every time we've gotten out of that situation, we've lost the skill to do it. It's called social skill decay. And a skill can decay in as little as 4 days of not using it. So our reliance on communication, digital transactions have decayed our skills to actually show people that they matter. But the second is that our attention is being fracked more than ever. There's more competing for our attention than ever. And you can't, you know, hurry and care can't coexist. You can't care for anything. Can't care for a person if you're in a hurry. So we have more competing for our attention than ever. And then finally, and we discussed this as we were prepping for this episode, is that we've minimized soft skills for the last 50 years. Anytime you see something as soft or simple, your brain is susceptible to an overconfidence bias. Your brain automatically devotes less energy and rigor to it. If I told you something was simple and then I asked you to go do it, chances are you'd very lazily go do it. One of the big problems is that we've been approaching these soft skills with less rigor. We almost have a collective overconfidence bias. In medicine, this manifests in research that shows like physicians. When physicians are asked to estimate the average amount of time that their patient talks before they interrupt them, on average, physicians say it's about 5 to 7 minutes. When they survey patients and ask patients, how long do you talk before your physician interrupts you? It's about 1 minute on average. So we have to rigorously overcome that overconfidence bias and commit to these skills. And we found that there are 25 skills across 3 practice areas that help people feel that they matter. And those 25 skills under those practice areas are skills to notice people, see and hear them, affirm people, show them the difference that they make and how they make it, and remind people how they are needed.
Hey, Zach, such a good start. And man, you've already said so much that I want to go back and unpack. I think I'll try to go back. I've jotted down some notes. You're a guy that has great data and really great kind of scientific connection to a lot of what you're talking about with mattering. And I want to get into that more. But you said the data supports 25 years of what? Of skill decay? Is that what we said?
Yes.
I mean, I guess my question is, yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I think anybody would have said certainly over the last 10 or 15, But what how does the data go back that far? I was a little surprised at 25 years.
Well, about 25 years to this year is when we sent the first text message.
How about that?
And since, it's become ubiquitous by the mid-2000s.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so what technology did, what those platforms did, is they allowed us to more efficiently connect with each other, which is great. And that's why everybody uses them. For example, right now, there's probably about 38 million people on average on Slack right now. The average adult today will send 40 text-based messages to peers on some platform, colleagues. These are interactions that previously, 20 years ago, would be happening in person.
Yep.
That are not happening in person anymore. And what we've found is that, yes, that those things are good. Like, those platforms are good. They help us move more efficiently. But what we're finding out now is that what we've lost is the social repetitions, the social situations. Like, social skills require social reps, just like any clinical expertise. Requires clinical reps, right? So the lower the social reps we're getting to do this stuff, the more the skill withers. I was just in an airport and I saw two people. I think they were on a date. I don't know. But they first had their phones out sitting in front of each, across from each other, like on their phones. And then I saw them both like collectively almost realize it. And they put their phones on the table. But then I was like really interested that they didn't talk. They didn't know what to do. Right. And I realized it's not the phone. It's the skill. They don't know what to do when they put down their phones. So, you know, that's why I disagree with some social psychologists that say the solution to our disconnection is to put down our phones. I think the solution is to know what to do, to reskill ourselves when we put down our phones. And so that's what's been missing. And it's not a surprise that, you know, 2030, the World Economic Forum just released their most in-demand skills for the future of work. For the first time, skills like understanding, curiosity, empathetic and active listening are in the top 10 most in-demand skills to succeed in the future of work.
So I've got a question, so I've got to jump in. So this is really good stuff. And so help me. The question is going to ultimately be, give me a practical example. So I'll kind of tell you where I'm headed. When I think about skills, like when I taught my daughter how to drive, started off in a big parking lot. She first needed to understand the difference between the brake and the gas. And we drove in circles in the parking lot. And then, but we kept on progressing. She made mistakes. She ran into the curb. She ran over cones that I bought, but she learned from those mistakes. But eventually she was creating neural pathways in her brain so that there were new habits, new routines, and she learned how to drive. And then we progressed to something more difficult than the parking lot. And eventually, you know, she's an adult now and drives all over the country with no problem. So that's the physical hard skills. When I think about something that might be categorized as soft skills, I think about the work that we've done with Dr. Edgar Schein, the late Dr. Edgar Schein, and humble inquiry and just asking questions that we didn't know the answer to in a conversation. And so as you practice that, you start to pick up on that skill of humble inquiry, or sometimes what he would call process inquiry, and so on. When I think of mattering, if I want to go out today, Zach, what is a practical way that I could practice showing others that they matter? Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. I mean, let's start. So those three practice areas: noticing, making sure people feel seen and heard; affirming, making sure people know the difference they make and how they make it; and showing people how they're needed. Noticed, affirmed, and needed are these three practice areas. I mean, let's just take noticing, for example. One of the things that we know is that the most elementary form of mattering is having attention paid to you. Right. So the skill of paying attention to another human being is something that we can learn and replicate and practice. For example, one of the things that we find in our research on leaders who do this really well is they tend to note things down. They don't leave it up to chance. So we were working with this big distribution center. They scored really low on their engagement surveys, except for one team. And we love outliers. So we went to the team and we said, "What do you do here?" And they all said, "It's our supervisor. She just gets us." We'd do anything for her. But what she does is every Friday, she has this notebook, and she writes down each of her team members' names and writes down one thing she heard them complain about, talk about, or that they were struggling with that week. It's one thing she wanted to remember about them that week. And then the next Monday, she looks at that notebook, and she schedules in her phone a three-minute check-in with each of them. And she says, that's all I do. And she says something like, I remembered last week that you were struggling with this piece of equipment. Did we get that fixed for you? And she told me that every time she does that, it's like everybody's nonverbals relax. It's like almost like there's this anxiety that's relieved when we're remembered. When somebody thinks about us when we're not there. You know, this skill of noting, of observing, of noting, and then sharing back what you observe, that is a skill that can be replicated. You can do that in conversations right now. If you're listening, think about a conversation you had last week that you're still thinking about, that was left unsaid, that there was some disagreement, or that there's something you want to follow up on. Put it on your calendar this week to call that person and say, I was thinking about our conversation last week. I noticed at the end you were frustrated. I wanted to know, is that right? How are you doing? And watch what happens to your relationship. Mm-hmm. The art of remembering somebody is a skill, and it takes noting, it takes discipline, it takes practice, it takes consistency, just like any skill. So that's an example of a skill of like noticing another person. You mentioned questions. Questions are skills. The skill of asking a good question, for example, when it comes to noticing people, instead of how are you, how's it going, how's your shift going, those are all greetings. They're not questions. But they're greetings. You know, if someone asks me, how are you? My brain can't compute the last like 10 hours of living a complex human life. So I just say, good, you.
Yeah, right.
And again, that doesn't help me feel seen or noticed. But we need to ask questions that are three things: clear, open, and exploratory. A clear question is one that has an object and a time frame. What has your attention today? Attention is the object, time frame today. I can answer that question. One of my favorite ones, I was just on a call and I sort of pick up on what other people do to me for me. And I'm like, oh, that's a good practice. This guy just said, what were you working on 5 minutes before we connected? And I was like, whoa, that's a cool question. I can totally answer that question, right? So clear, make sure they're open. How was the meeting good? That's a closed question. I see people all the time in meetings, they'll open it and they'll say, how's everybody doing? Good. You imagine if you weren't good? Not me. Or I hope everybody's doing well, right? If I'm not doing well, like the last thing I need is your hope. I need your support. So what happens is we close down space. So asking questions like, what was the most insightful thing you heard in the meeting? What's the most insightful thing you heard that you'll take action on? And then finally, this last one is really important. Get really good at asking exploratory questions and stop asking so many evaluative questions. Evaluative questions are questions that you are in the position of power to judge the quality of the response. What's the status on that project? What's the status on that? What's going on with that? Did you get that done? Like, these are all like evaluative questions. Like when I ask my kid, did you hustle in practice? He's just going to say, yeah, right? Because when we ask people evaluative questions, they will always give us a self-protective defensive answer. Instead, you could ask, you know, what are some log jams you're coming against to get that project done by Friday? Anything I can remove? Or instead of asking my kid, did you hustle in practice? I could ask, hey, what's an effort you were proud of? I will get the same data, but I give them the power. So that's just an example. Two things. Those are two of the like 10 practices from noticing that can be honed. They can be developed. They can be practiced. And they can be reflected on and they can grow.
Yeah, I think that's what I was going to go to is I like how you sum that up. But, you know, they take practice. I mean, asking exploratory questions don't come naturally. I mean, they may for some people, but for most of us, me included, it's not a natural. It's way easier to ask an evaluative question or a question I already know the answer to, giving a shout out back to Ed Shine. So, no, that's great in the noticing space. Zach, what about the other practice area? The next one's affirming. Give us some skills to affirm.
This is important to understand these skills. You have to understand the difference between affirmation and other things like appreciation and recognition. appreciation is showing general gratitude for who someone is. It's for their presence, for their role. You can do that in an employee appreciation day. Everybody's doing appreciation weeks right now, lunches, perks, platforms, kudos platforms, awards, values-based awards. All of those are good. Appreciation is showing gratitude for who someone is. You can do that through a symbol. Recognition is showing gratitude for what someone does. You're spotlighting their contributions. You can do that through a symbol. But affirmation is showing somebody how their specific gifts make a specific impact. You can't do that through a symbol. You can only do it through an interaction. So a lot of times what's missing in organizations and in healthcare systems, and I see this with a lot of the kudos, the stickers on the walls, the patient kudos to caregivers, which are all great, is that organizations are relying on symbols of value instead of ensuring skillfully the daily experience of being valued.
Whoa. And say that again. That was good.
Organizations are over-relying on symbols of value without ensuring that leaders have the skills to create the daily experience of feeling valued.
Yeah, that's really good.
You know, I'm writing a paper on this right now. There was a study done in healthcare that found that healthcare workers indicate that they're recognized with like public recognition or for big wins or when something goes right. But what they really want is everyday affirmation that their specific efforts are making a specific difference. So wow. There's two sides of affirmation, right? You have to be able to know and name people's unique gifts. This is a skill. There are four unique gifts everybody brings us every day. Their strengths, what they love to do and what they're good at. Their purpose, the unique impact they make on a team. Their perspective, how only they see the work in the world. And their wisdom, what only they can teach the team. And so being able to spot those things in others and then name them back specifically is a skill. And one great skill to do that is through giving meaningful gratitude, right? So instead of saying thank you or good job, you know, everybody listening could just try this. Go one step further and show people the difference they make and exactly how they make it. There's four elements to doing this. Describe the setting. When and where did it happen? Yesterday at the meeting. Right. They can't argue that they were there. You're not the supervisor that just says thank you at 1 o'clock every Friday anymore. You're a noticer. Second, describe the behavior. You know, when you went around and synthesized everybody's inputs, right, that's the behavior. Three, describe the gifts. You demonstrated you're really good, like intuitive, integrative listener. I can see that you're really good at that. You're really quick with people. And you really have a gift of developing consensus in a room. So name their gifts and then describe the impact that it had. And did you see everybody walking out of that room? I mean, the energy was completely different because of you. That's different than, hey, nice job in the meeting. Thank you.
Right.
Right. Because what you're doing is the Latin root of the word affirm is affirmare. And it literally means to strengthen or to firm up. When you affirm somebody, you're giving them the evidence in their environment that strengthens the belief that they're significant. And I think that skill, those skills are what is missing when it comes to appreciation and recognition.
Yeah, so good.
Really good. Now there's a third one, right?
Yeah, so, and again, we could spend all afternoon on affirming. No, Zach, it's excellent. The third practice area is needed.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back to one for affirm that I think is a skill that people don't recognize. I got to work with the National Park Service, and I get frequently asked to observe leaders who have like outlier outcomes. So there was a leader of a facilities and maintenance team in a park in the West, inhospitable environment. You know, these maintenance people have to like maintain this infrastructure in these harsh climates, and he had incredibly low turnover. Incredibly high morale. He filled positions really quickly in a very rural environment, which is unheard of. And so I was trying to figure out what he did there. And I got to shadow him, which was cool. But he was going around taking pictures that week of like the park, like bridges that were repaired that visitors were using. He took pictures of a trail that was reopened that a family was walking on. He took a picture of bathrooms that were shorter line because a bathroom was repaired. It was in the middle of the summer. And he told me that it was for his weekly email. And on Friday, he sends an email. And the subject line is, look what you did.
I love that.
And he just attaches the photos. But what he said to me was really interesting. He goes, Zach, you know, My people can't question whether they matter. I give them photographic evidence. And what I love about that skill, right, is that it depicts that, you know, good leaders, they can they tell people that they matter, but great leaders have practices and the skills like that to show them exactly how. They don't leave any wiggle room in someone questioning whether they matter. And I think that this is what's missing in a lot of leadership practice in that area. And it transitions into the needing practice, right? Because showing people how they're needed is showing people how they're relied on and indispensable for something bigger. When NASA was launching the Apollo missions, John F. Kennedy famously went into the Space Center and passed the janitor and said, "Hey, what do you do here?" The janitor very calmly just said, "Oh, I'm putting a person on the moon." It's a feel-good story about how a sense of purpose can really be energizing. But Andrew Carton at the Wharton School, he did an archival study of NASA. He wanted to figure out how they did this, how they got this belief instilled, because it was a really interesting challenge, and I never thought about it like this. But they had a mission that pretty much everybody agreed was impossible, to put a person on the moon by the end of the decade. And they had 300,000-plus contract workers across the United States working on various aspects of this mission, from chemists, physicists, janitors, truck drivers transporting goods, astronauts, administrative staff, many of whom would not be contracted with NASA when they finished this impossible mission that nobody knew they could accomplish. How do you get all of those people to believe in this, to consistently maintain motivation for a decade? And what he found, what researchers found, is that on the blackboards at NASA, on the meeting minutes, they had what was called ladders to the moon that were drawn. So for each work group, at the top was the mission to put a person on the moon by the end of the decade. At the bottom was that group's tasks that they were working on that month. The next rung up was a tangible, measurable objective that task was needed for. The next rung up was a tangible, measurable objective that task was needed for, all the way to how those objectives were needed to put a person on the moon by the end of the decade to advance science. And they drew them, and they talked about them, and they made people from different interdisciplinary teams have stepping stone meetings where that one work group would provide the stepping stones for how that other work group's work was needed for them. Laddering is a skill, right? Yeah. It's a skill to be able to communicate in that way, to measurably show people the difference they make, whether on a case, on a floor, on a shift, in a project. And you don't have to draw the ladder, but being able to say, "Hey, I want to let you know this is needed for this reason, and this is the outcome." Because, you know, when people feel replaceable, they'll act that way.
Yes.
If they feel like just another staff member, they'll act that way. But if they can see how they're needed, they will show up and commit. And, you know, one of the ways to do that laddering is simply in a phrase is to say these five words, "If it wasn't for you," right? And really make sure that people around that you know how they're relied on and indispensable.
So laddering is one of the skills there. Belief, I gathered, is another one. Anything else that you would touch on in the needed skill set?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is like showing people the data of how they and their specific inputs actually make a difference.
Skip and I were just looking at that upstairs, and this really, I mean, our conversation made me reflect on some of that. I mean, because we talk. Indicators a lot, KPIs and things. And again, but the connection to those and getting to kind of leading indicators, but getting to things that individuals are doing that makes a big difference to that end result, but making sure that we're acknowledging it and connecting it to something bigger.
Yeah, she was the director of a creative digital advertising agency. And she told me that she did something really interesting. She was having a young account manager. He was stellar, but he always felt like he wasn't doing his job well enough. And he had a lot of issues with that. And he even thought about changing careers. And so what she did is she just did this like as a last ditch effort, but it's a really awesome example. She actually pulled engagement data for her clients' campaigns in which he was the account manager on. And showed him the difference that he makes from other accounts that didn't have him on it. And, you know, he, when you talk to him, he's like, that's what kept me going. Right. Very cool. So I love that. Like, because that's this, and also the skill to be able to know who needs it, right. To notice who might need it. Yeah. Often, like, we under notice our high performers, people who just show up, don't make much noise. A lot of times we under notice them. We assume they know that they matter. So an overarching skill is the ability to ask the question of, who do I need to show that they matter more? Who do I need to see more on my team? Who do I need to invest in more? Who needs to see how they add value? Who needs to see how they're needed? Who might be left behind right now? And those are the types of reflections that, as a leader, that's also a macro skill to be able to invest your energies in the places and the people that need it most.
So, you know, Zach, I love this, and I want to kind of zoom back out a little bit for a minute. And so in total, how many hard skills have you come up with to help people understand how much mattering matters? Sorry. For
yeah.
That.
I mean, we've identified over 25 skills. I mean, I have it at 25 skills. That, and this has not come from like me thinking of these in my office. This comes from like being out with people and asking thousands of people, and through surveys and interviews, when you most feel that you matter to a leader, what are they doing?
Wow.
And we've codified those things as like, what are the ones that are that are evident across almost all interviews? And there are these 25 behaviors, 25 skills that come up under the practice areas of noticing, affirming, and needing. Now, some of those skills are also for senior leaders on scaling and building an environment to maintain these skills. But I think that's a deeper conversation, because, you know, the environment and the system enables or disables these skills from being enacted.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, and I love to talk systems. And again, today in our organization, we're talking a lot about scale. So I'm curious if you could spend, I know it's a much deeper topic, but if you could spend a minute kind of unpacking kind of how it relates to systems.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things I'm talking about. One is the systems that enable the behaviors you say you want to occur.
Right.
And two is the system to scale, teach, develop, and evaluate these skills and behaviors. I want to focus on the former, because if you're an organization, say you're a healthcare organization, and you measure someone's productivity or value based on their efficiency, which many healthcare organizations do now, and you have someone who's going from one place to the next, one clinical room to the next, as fast as they can to meet these metrics, then the environment and system you've set up makes, for example, checking in with people, paying attention, harder and almost impossible. And there's nothing more frustrating than knowing what you should do and being in an environment that stops you from doing it. So one of the things for organizations to ask yourself under each of these is noticing, affirming, needing. What are the barriers, environmental barriers, that we have control over removing for our leaders to more readily take these behaviors? Or what are the environmental triggers that will remind them to do it?
Yeah, I like that.
I think that's a broader question. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about barriers a lot, because again, everybody's had a leader that says, oh, I'm here to remove barriers and obstacles. But give me an example of something that we can remove to help people do the things that they know that need to be done.
Yeah. So we did, one of the things we did with this group of scientists is they work on a lot of these complex reports. It was actually a governmental group, but we did this thing called a green, yellow, red check-in, where we would have them check in on their energy levels, but they ended up putting it on their cubicles and it was always red.
Oh,
and finally,
leave me alone. Like,
no,
but
finally, so this is what I mean. When you notice people, when you get closer to understanding how they're doing, you actually have the data you need to see what those barriers are. Sometimes it's hard to see the barriers until you do the work to notice people and to take an interest and ask the questions, all the skills you've been talking about. So it was always red. And finally, the leader just said, God, what are we doing here? Why is it always red? Let's just have a meeting to talk about that. And what they realized is that they were spending so much time in meetings that they didn't have the time to write these reports, that their job was to write and deliver these reports, these technical reports. And so they were constantly under stress. So every time they were at their desk, at their computer, it was like being a journalist under a deadline, someone said, which is a very difficult way to write scientific reports. You don't want people doing that under that pressure. And so the conversation became, okay, what are the meetings that we can remove in which we can still have the information we need to do our jobs well and as good as we're doing them, that can create the space? And that was the conversation with the group.
I love it. No, that's really good. I want to go back to, I think this is a good way to kind of wrap up our conversation, but it's something that I've reflected on it since our first podcast. And it's really this concept of skills and hard skills versus soft skills. And I think you've really debunked that, but I really want to go back to that full circle. Uh-huh. We spent a whole half hour talking about skills of mattering, but there's some people that would still look at this and say, oh, that's the soft stuff. We got to work on, we got to work on hard skills. And what would you say to that leader or those group of leaders today?
Well, I mean, I think they're essential human skills. I would say to that leader also, soft skills was a term that was invented by a military psychologist that couldn't categorize the skills that actually contributed to the highest performing teams in the Army because they weren't technical and they weren't equipment based. So he went into a press conference and he said, these are the soft skills. And it was things like listening, connecting people to a bigger purpose, fostering trust. Those were ironically all of the things that were the leverage of these high performing Army teams in these studies. And he called them soft. So they're actually anything but soft. They're actually essential.
I love that story. I've never heard that story.
Yeah. And so I think that what happens is that we call them soft because what we really mean, what we think we mean is intuitive, right? That we should just know how to do it. I mean, we should just know how to show gratitude because we're people and we should be good people. But the ability to show someone gratitude in a way that's psychologically meaningful, that is a skill. And I would say when it comes to mattering, I mean, mattering is a survival instinct, like eating or sleeping. I mean, if we don't matter to another person enough as we're growing up, we don't survive. No one's embarking on their profession right now. No one's listening to this podcast if at some point you did not matter enough to another person to keep you alive. So filling that human instinct is just about as touchy-feely as feeding someone who's hungry. Mm. And as a leader, if it's a basic human need, it should be a basic human skill.
That's awesome.
If it's a basic human need, it should be a basic skill, because as a leader, your job is not really to do the job anymore. It's to lead the people doing the job. It's your occupation now. And every occupation requires a different set of skills.
Really, really good. Okay, I'm going to give you the impossible task. I have two questions as we land the plane. The first question you're going to answer with no problem. It's going to come quick. The top three skills, summarize again, are what?
Show people how they're noticed. Show people how they're affirmed. Show people how they're needed.
Perfect. Okay, here's the final question. It's a curveball, and so you're going to have to answer it briefly, but I'll give you more than a few seconds. We live in a world right now, in October of 2025, as we record this, we live in a world that everyone's writing, everyone's talking, everyone's thinking, and everyone's practicing this thing with two letters called AI. What concerns do you have in this new wild, wild west of AI that we're moving towards when it comes to mattering?
I'm not concerned. In my line of work, I'm happy that AI is going to take over the technical and operational skills so we can focus on what's left, which is the human beings in front of us. AI can do our tasks. AI can't take moral responsibility for them. AI could do this podcast. It could probably replicate us, but it can't take moral responsibility for the impact it has on people. AI can't care for you. It won't care for you. We can't program, automate, or replicate human care. And so if you really want to be irreplaceable in the age of AI, double down on the skills to create caring, trusting relationships, because it's what AI cannot do. And that's why I think AI is going to necessitate all the skills we're talking about today.
Perfect answer. In the world of tonight, we start the first game of the World Series. You stepped up to the plate and hit the ball out of the park. That was beautiful. Well, Zach, thank you so much for coming on Connecting the Dots podcast for the second time. Thank you so much for the power of mattering. It is the buzz out there right now. Everyone's talking about it, writing about it. I see it everywhere on LinkedIn. So on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, Zach, thank you so much for the work you do. Thank you for the leadership you do. And thank you for mattering.
Thank you.